Good morning. My name is Joy Fleming, and I am pleased to welcome you to the Monadnock Summer Lyceum with today's guest speaker, Lenny Machinsky. Thanks to the Tucker family for generously sponsoring today's event, and to Achille Agway of Peterborough for the lovely flowers. For many years, the Monadnock Summer Lyceum has brought outstanding, world-class speakers to the Monadnock region to serve as catalysts to inform, engage, and inspire an active citizenry on local, national, and global issues. The Monadnock Summer Lyceum is supported primarily through contributions from our audience. We deeply appreciate your donations, which may be placed in the glass bowls, in the church, and in the parish hall. Thank you for your generous support. Today's talk is being recorded and will soon be available as a podcast on our website, monadnocklyceum.org. Our speaker today is Lenny Machinsky. In introducing Lenny, I want you to know why I'm up here. In the early 80s, I was in college at UNH. I got a life-altering call from Harriet Feinberg, a recruiter from the Apple Hill Center for Chamber Music. Despite spending every summer since I was five in the Monadnock region, despite having very cultured, classical music-loving parents and majoring in music at UNH, I had never heard about this summer music camp. It was not long before I was an Apple Hill groupie, spending as much time as I could every summer and attending concerts in the mountains of the Monadnock region in the middle of winter. Why did my parents let me and a friend drive my parents' 70s-era yellow Volkswagen Beetle up a snowy mountainside in January? I remember, I don't know why they did, but I'm thankful that they did. And I'm also thankful that we didn't slip off the edge on the way home. And one fall, we hitchhiked from Durham to East Sullivan to attend a cello workshop. What was the draw? What was and is the magic? These are some of the reasons. Every person's contribution in the chamber music group is important. There's a strong commitment to teaching verbal communication skills so everyone gets a say in how the piece is presented. There's a loving, supporting, supportive performing atmosphere where cheers and foot stomps accompany the usual applause at the end of a piece, and an international cast of characters with faculty and students from all over the world. Apple Hill's commitment to quality, education, and connectivity grew into the Playing for Peace program in the late 80s, and in the 2000s, Lenny Machinsky came on as executive director. Lenny's approach fits the ethos of the way I was taught to love chamber music. Listen, think, breathe together, find the connection. Please sit back, relax, and let's enjoy what Lenny and the players from Apple Hill have in store for us. Thank you, Lenny.
Thank you. Thank you, Joy, so much. I'm so glad you were the one that introduced me today. I imagine that today when you were listening to these wonderful people play music this morning that you all had goosebumps. Well, in animals, goosebumps occur when there's a threat. In humans, it occurs when we experience what I like to call awe. That positive feeling of being in the presence of something vast that transcends our understanding of the world. UC Berkeley professor Jonathan Keltner believes that awe is the ultimate collective emotion. It motivates people to do things for the greater good. Through the many activities that give us goosebumps, like collective rituals, celebrations, dance, religious gatherings, and yes, music, awe helps us shift from our own self-interest to the interests of the group to which we belong, thus improving our odds for survival. And we can see the results of this collective consciousness right here, right now, with this very series, and also in the many groups in our area, like all the Chambers of Commerce's, the Rotaries, Hannah Grimes, Arts Alive, Keene State, the many area churches, schools, all the choruses around here, MoCo Arts, and yes, Apple Hill. A recent issue of the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology provides empirical support for the claim that awe helps bind us to others, motivating us to act in collaborative ways that enables strong groups and cohesive communities. In one study, participants had to fill in the blank of the following phrase, I am, and then blank. They did this 20 times, and they did this either while standing before an awe-inspiring replica of a T-Rex dinosaur in a museum, or they were standing in the same place, but they looked down a hallway, like a blank hallway, away from the T-Rex. So when they looked at the dinosaur, they defined their individual selves in collectivist terms as a member of a culture, a species, a university, or even a moral cause. Another study had one group of participants look at a grove of eucalyptus trees that were in full bloom. They looked for 1 minute, long enough for everyone to report being filled with awe. And then there was this other group that looked at a science building, like a blank science building. Then both groups encountered a person who stumbled, dropped a handful of pins into the dirt, and the participants that were looking at the eucalyptus trees helped the person and picked up the pins. The people that looked at the science building, they didn't do anything. So experiencing awe seemed to make the tree-gazing people more inclined to help someone in need. They also reported feeling less entitled and less self-important than the other participants did. So there's a lot of other studies that were about evoking feelings of awe by having participants recall and write about a past experience of awe, or to have them watch a 5-minute video of sublime scenes of nature. And the participants that experienced awe, more so than those participants experienced emotions like pride or amusement, those other participants cooperated more, they shared more resources, and sacrificed more for others, all of which are behaviors necessary for our collective life. All of this shows that awe fills people with a different sense of themselves, one that's smaller, it's more humble, and part of something larger. So in the great balancing act of our social lives, between the gratification of self-interest and a concern for others, fleeting experiences of awe redefine the self in terms of the collective and orient our actions toward the needs of those around us. You could make the case today that our culture is awe-deprived. We spend more and more time working and commuting and less time outdoors and with other people. Camping trips and picnics and midnight skies are foregone in favor of working weekends. Attendance at arts events like live music, theater, museums, and galleries, that's all dropped over the years. Arts and music programs in schools are being dismantled in lieu of programs better suited to standardized testing. Time outdoors or self-exploration are sacrificed for resume-building activities. I feel like awe deprivation has had a hand in a broad societal shift that has been widely observed over the last 50 years. People have become more individualistic, more self-focused, more materialistic, and less connected to others. But we're reversing that trend at Apple Hill. How do we do that? Well, we started a program called Playing for Peace, and that's a program that's about community building and conflict resolution through skills learned in playing chamber music. And what are those skills? The ability to be sensitive, to be flexible, to listen, to watch, and to adjust within a group. the very same skills we need to work and function effectively in the world. We started Playing for Peace, our program. We started it in 1988, and we started it as a way to bring together populations in political conflict and have them play in chamber groups together. And that was a trip in 1988 where we were going to the Middle East. And whenever we go on these trips, we do a lot of performing, but we also do a lot of teaching. And we have people from these regions, we put them in little chamber groups together. And chamber groups are groups of four, three, two, you know, small groups without a conductor. And so in that trip in the Middle East, we had this idea to put Israelis and Palestinians together in a small little chamber group. And it sounds easy, but it was actually very difficult. We had to get the State Department involved. We had to go to Washington, D.C. We had to do a lot of work to get that to happen. But that's how our program started. However, over the span of 30 years, all of our programs are now guided by the philosophy of Playing for Peace. And we did this because everyone, everybody, all of us, were all overcoming some kind of challenge. So we still reach out to populations in political conflict, but now students underrepresented or unexposed to classical music, or with cultural, generational, ethnic, gender, religious, economic, and ideological differences are paired together in the small ensembles. And since these ensembles don't have a conductor, and you saw that happening right before your eyes, you know, 45 minutes ago, so since they don't have a conductor, they need to figure out how to play the music together. So in order to do that, at Apple Hill, we each summer we have 45 faculty that come, and they're all chamber music experts, and they coach and serve as mentor to our students. And we use what I like to call the five skills of chamber music. Those are the skills that those are the skills that you saw them doing. And those are the skills that our faculty teaches. And those skills are watching, listening, being flexible, being sensitive, and then adapting. And again, those are the same qualities that we need to function, all of us, in our society. So that's our Apple Hill experiment. And at Apple Hill, we have a waiting list of students. They come from almost every U.S. state and from countries across the globe. And each summer, we have about 300 students that are here at Apple Hill. Our atmosphere collaboration extends beyond music making. We house everyone in cabins scattered throughout our 100-acre campus. We all share meals. You know, in the summer, our food service provides 14,000 meals. We all do chores together, we socialize together, we climb mountains, you know, small mountains, but we climb mountains. We go on hikes. And what that does is form meaningful bonds of friendship and understanding that enhance everyone's growth, not only as musicians, but as human beings. So rather than music being just an artistic, an academic, or technical pursuit, at Apple Hill, it now takes on the added benefit of being a powerful catalyst for connection. And I'd like to speak a little bit now about why we do it through music. That's because music exists beyond words. Music allows us a pathway to explore aspects of our lives that are unavailable through words. It accesses emotions and skills that may be dormant or even unexplored. In a music camp like Apple Hill that has a strong educational structure or framework, enables us to explore our abilities and our creativity in order to make music with others, and in Apple Hill's case, chamber music. When like-minded people come together to work on a project or make music, it can be challenging in itself. But when people of different ideologies or cultures come together, it creates very unique challenges, such as stereotypical thinking, lots of assumptions, even fear. And when we work on those five skills, and remember those skills, the watching, the listening, the being sensitive, the being flexible, the being adapting, we provide the avenue to identify what is interfering with making music. Hence, what is interfering with making peace or fulfillment in our lives? Music and chamber music, that's the key we use to empower everybody. to empower them to be their true, authentic selves, to unlock creativity, and to understand complex social relationships. And through music, everyone learns to communicate and connect with each other in ways that transcend boundaries that they may encounter in their home communities. And an interesting thing about Apple Hill is that we're inclusive, we accept everybody, and we put our chamber groups together by level. So you're gonna go to Apple Hill and you're gonna see, you might see a group that's at a beginner level. And so there might be a retired 65 or 70-year-old defense attorney who was like prosecuting cases in New York City, and that person decided they wanted to pick up the violin. So they're a beginner, and we're gonna put them in a group with two 14-year-olds that are also beginners. And you're gonna go there and you're gonna see this group, this 65-year-old and two 14-year-olds, and maybe the first violinist is a female. Remember the criminal defense attorney? Let's say he's a man, and he's like, he's a winner. And he has to watch the 14-year-old girl and start a piece with her. And you never see that. I never see that happening. You know, usually people 65 or older are usually telling the 14-year-old what to do. So you have to really let go of a lot. So you also might see Israelis or Arabs together, or African and Caucasian Americans together. And while the news reports that these populations don't trust each other or have a history of violence, while they're at Apple Hill, they sit and watch each other, they listen to each other, they're sensitive to each other, and they do this because they have a task, and that task is to rehearse, to learn, and to perform music. So really, it's all about the music. I don't think we've ever, since I've been at Apple Hill, at least, I don't think we've ever had a discussion like, you guys have to get along, or this is about peace. It's always about the music. So if the Israeli and the Arabs are in a group together and they don't start the piece together, no one's gonna say, why aren't those Israelis and Arabs starting together? They're gonna say, why aren't those musicians playing together? So identities are gone. You just become a musician. And when I'm at Apple Hill, and everybody that I talk to at Apple Hill, we had a concert last night where our students were all playing, and all we did was say how much we were filled with awe. Everybody experiences awe. And you see the awe when a 12 or 15-year-old, when they're sitting up in the balcony at Apple Hill, they're not looking at their phones. They're quiet. They're rapt with attention, and they're watching their mentors and their colleagues perform music in this beautiful 100-year-old concert barn. Or you see the awe when our students from the big cities around the globe, like Jerusalem or New York City or Syria or Los Angeles, they sit and marvel at the quiet and the beauty of the sunset on our campus in the beautiful Monadnock region. And since it's inspiring to everybody, because everybody, no matter who, no matter where they are from or the level of experience, everyone is doing one thing, rehearsing and playing music and being their best authentic self. So I like to think that we're a kind of laboratory. Our emphasis is on the internal, and the usual wrappings or external appearances, they're meaningless to the essence of the music. And I feel like it's a magical journey. And it's a magical journey to the unknown, and it's a magical journey to the unexpected. And to me, the amazing thing about the unexpected is that it's only unexpected because it's not part of our experiences. And once it happens, it's not unexpected anymore. And this opens the possibility for other kinds of similar experiences, and they happen all the time at Apple Hill. So this part of my talk, I like to talk a little bit about the mechanics of chamber music. And to me, one of the most important parts of the mechanics is communication. We're communicating to each other. And it's central for oneness, for listening, for watching and adjusting all the chamber music basics and the skills that form the basis for our Playing for Peace program. There's a tremendous lot of focused attention, lots of physical body movement, and lots of looking. So I've narrowed them down to like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things, watching each other. So that's about cueing together. So it's about moving together. And it's important because it makes it the ensemble uniform. And people actually move and breathe together. And in our workshops in the summer, we actually teach our students how to do this. We actually teach them how to move, how to start a piece. Listening, it's all about balance, how loud and soft to play, listening to someone that might have the solo or the melody in a piece. It's about hearing everyone. Flexibility and moving together. In order to be a together ensemble, the people in the group need to work as a unit. They need to work as a team. They need to have the same tempo, and that tempo fluctuates all the time when they're playing music, so they need to really be ready to move together. Sensitivity. There's a lot of different roles that each one of our musicians have. Sometimes they're playing accompaniment, sometimes they're playing background, sometimes they have a solo. And that requires the other people in the group to listen and to be flexible with each other. So when someone in the ensemble has a solo, the others need to play less and they need to listen to the person that's playing the solo. And adjusting. That's about being in tune with each other. And that's really important. And you have to have awareness and you have to have a lot of flexibility and willingness to do this as a group. So we're going to do good and bad examples of all those skills right now for you, because I think it's really important, because it's magical, but it's also incredibly practical. You know, if they're out of tune, it's horrible. So you're going to hear that. But before we do, I want to do this thing with all of you. We're going to do one of the first skills together, and it's a skill that I learned when I was a student, when I was in a conservatory. There was a violinist that was in the Juilliard String Quartet, Robert Koff, and he was coaching our group, and we were horrible. We were so not together, and he didn't know what to do, and so he started this game, and it's called the DIT game. So I'm going to ask you all to say the word DIT when I do. Are ready? Want to do it? Okay, here we go. DIT, 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 DIT. Impossible. So now we're going to do it once more. Ready? DIT, 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 DIT. Awesome. So that's the first skill, and it is like magic, but I'm going to tell you what happened. We were all really looking at each other, which is amazing. When's the last time you looked at somebody the way you were looking at me? You were really, really looking at me. I was looking at all of you, and so we were all ready to do it. I gave a cue physically in the spirit of the piece, or my DIT, and you guys were like really in tune with that. And just before we said the word, I hesitated for like a fraction of a second to make sure you were ready, and then we did it together. So the first time, there was nothing between us. You were scrambling. I'm sure some of you were getting angry. I didn't care anything about any of you. So the second time, there was a lot of rapport between the two of us. I mean, the whole bunch of us. A tremendous amount of connection. A tremendous amount of empathy, and in a very broad way, and this is going to sound dramatic, we loved each other. And that's a beautiful thing. That's the awe. So thank you for playing the game with me. I thought you were awesome. So there's a resident ensemble at Apple Hill called the Apple Hill String Quartet, and they embody all the qualities of chamber music to the public. And those people are Elise Cooter and Colleen Jennings on the violin, Mike Kelly on the viola, Rupert Thompson on the cello, and the five of us travel all over the globe. I give talks like this, they give a tremendous amount of concerts, and they teach, we do these little workshops every place we go, and we're always recruiting people to come to Apple Hill in the summer. And right now we're having our workshop, and so the four of them are over there teaching and doing their thing, so I'm sorry they're not here, but I thought today we could do our little practical show about the five skills of music with these amazing people here. And they're going to introduce themselves, but I thought I'd just say their names now. So we have Nanor over here on the violin, Betty on the piano, and Sophia on the cello. And we're going to demonstrate the good and bad ways of playing chamber music. So the first thing we're going to do is watching. And like I said, it's about cueing and starting together. So why don't you do a bad example first? That's the letter F thing, the pickup to letter F. That's good. Okay. So now let's, you know, do it the chamber music way. Good, good, awesome. So we did this one. The first way they just started, they were totally untogether, just like we were. The second way, they actually all gave each other a cue. They were looking at each other, and it was beautiful. The second one is listening. It's about a solo and making room for that voice. So I think you were going to do the beginning of this piece. So here's a bad example. Okay, good. Let's do a good way. Okay, beautiful. That's one of the best moments in music. In order for us to hear Sophia play so beautifully on the cello, Betty has to be chill. She has to play less. And if she's like thinking, I'm mad at Sophia today, I'm just not gonna listen to her. It's gonna be horrible. That's a beautiful moment. So sensitivity, it's about intonation. I think you were gonna start at P. So this is fascinating. So let's do the bad way first. Oof. Okay, stop. Okay, let's do the good way. So, yeah, the piano, they just hit the keys and it's there. But a string player, we can do a lot of adjusting with our fingers. It looks like, oh, they just put their finger down and it's in tune. It's subtle. You can move your finger a fraction of an inch if you need to be in tune with your other string players. And that's what they did the second time. The first time, they were supposed to be in unison, so like with us talking together or having a common thing, and they were stubborn. They refused to be flexible and switch. The second time, they did it. The beautiful thing is that they did it for the music. I mean, they did it because they love each other too, but they did it to make the music successful, and that's what's so beautiful about the music thing. So now flexibility, moving together, I think you were gonna do something after F. Wait a minute. Okay. That was kind of the bad way. They were totally lost. So now let's do it the good way. Good. Good. Okay. Stop. So that's an interesting thing, because they have direction from the composer. They have the notes, they have the note values and everything. But they wanted to speed up the section because it's exciting. And so they're not discussing it in the moment. They're so in tune with each other that they're all moving the tempo together. It's fascinating. And then the last thing is adapting, and I think you were going to do 8 before N. So we're going to do a bad example first. Okay, yeah, bad. Let's do it once more, the good way. 8 before N. Good, okay. So adapting is all about, we don't know what's going to happen. She might want to do it slower. The pianist might want to do it faster. Even though they're together, maybe Sophia wants to be, they just have to keep adapting constantly. And what that means for the three of them or for any chamber group is they have to have a tremendous amount of trust, and they're going to be willing to take risks with each other. I thought now it might be really great for you, for us to all to listen to those skills in action. They're going to play the whole first movement of this piece. It's a majestic trio by Brahms. It's a trio in B major. They're going to play the first movement of that piece. And so this is a great chance for you to watch those skills in action and watch them doing their thing. And right now, coming up to turn pages is their coach, Seba Ali. And Seba came to Apple Hill 10 years ago from Egypt as a student, and now she's at Apple Hill as a faculty, and she was their coach this summer. Thank you.
Okay, I think before we open it up to questions, I think it's really would be good for you to hear a little bit from them, like who they are, more importantly, how old they are, which is shocking, and maybe where you're from, and then we'll take some questions. So can we start with you? Is that all right? You sounded so beautiful at the beginning.
My name is Sophia Knappe. I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina, and I'm 16 years old.
Hi, my name is Betty Gibbs. I'm from upstate New York, and I'm 17 years old.
Hi, my name is Nano Saraydarian. I'm 18, and I'm from LA, but originally from Syria.
You were here for two summers. Is this your second summer? Yeah, and you've been here this is your third, and this is your first. And you two had played in a group together, you and Sophia Gibbs, but you didn't know them. So that's the other thing. So you put this piece together in basically 10 days, yeah. So just before we leave, what are you gonna take away with you when you go back to North Carolina from Apple Hill? Maybe just a couple of thoughts.
I think that playing chamber music, it really like gives you a sense of leadership and communication that you can apply to other things like school or playing in other situations. I think that's really important.
For me, music is something that makes you forget everything for that moment, like any worries or any pain or even your past that might not have been good. Apple Hill really helped me with that. It made me realize that music is something that brings peace to this world, actually gets people to think about other things besides their daily life problems that they have in their lives. I think it's really important to put aside your differences when you're playing with other people because I think music is the only way that actually truly connects people together.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've been through a lot of summer festivals, chamber music and solo, and I haven't really felt the type of community and connection I felt when I came to Apple Hill. I was kind of nervous to come here and the first day, but learning to play Brahms with you guys was like one of my favorite things that I've ever done. And I really want to come back to Apple Hill.
We want all of you back. I'm going to close today by suggesting that we allow and even insist that we experience awe to actively seek out what gives us goosebumps, be it looking at trees, sunsets, or listening to music and doing it at Apple Hill. I hope you will attend our concerts. We do them every Tuesday in the summer. And I hope you get to do that and experience awe like I do every week. All of us will be better off for it. So thank you, everybody. And thank you so much to the three of you.